Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
All right. Hey, Cyrus, here's your answer. Ernesto wrote me an email a little bit ago. He says, Johnny Appleseed wears a pot on his head because he's a traveler, and wherever he stops, he has a pot to cook with. I guess he could carry it, but he chose to carry it on his head. I watch it with my kids all the time. The song is great also. So now you know.
We have come full circle with Johnny Appleseed.
Well, the modern Johnny Appleseed would carry a bag of pot. He wouldn't have a pot.
It took me a second. It didn't even register.
Yeah.
Your little joke there.
Because words change.
Yeah, they do.
So instead of wearing a pot on his head, he would carry pot on his person. And when he needed more, he would just stop in California at the pot dispensary.
They're on every corner. It's like Starbucks in Seattle.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had to ask my friends, like, what are all these? Oh, that's where you get pot. What?
Yeah. I know. And they're always busy, too. I noticed lots of cars in the parking lot. Okay, let's go to Jen, or let's go back to Jen in Frankfort, Delaware. Jen, you had just gotten rolling, and you told me the story about what happened at Mass, and then we had to take our break. So can you just give me the 30-second synopsis for people who are tuning in right now and didn't hear what you said earlier?
So 30-second synopsis would be my daughter was just a little bit chatty. My preacher approached us after Mass and basically kind of redirected us to a crowded room. And I didn't feel as if she was being rambunctious or loud. She was just a little bit chatty. And so I guess the cash value is, what's the best way to approach him about this or talk to him about this, or should I even talk to him about this? Because I don't feel as if she was being super distracted. And we also have a 4-year-old who, you know, will be receiving the sacraments in a couple of years. And we think it's really important to kind of stay together as a family in Mass, if we can. You know, of course, if she was crying and screaming, of course, I would definitely take her out.
Yeah.
But if she's just kind of babbling, she's 19 months old, you know, she's just kind of babbling, we didn't really see the harm in it. So I guess, since you're a father of 11, you can empathize.
I'm thinking back to some times where we had, you know, just squirmy, rambunctious, noisy toddlers, for example. So I can relate to what you're saying personally. So here are my thoughts. I said before we went to the break that everybody has an opinion on this. I'll share my opinion since you asked me. So number one is we should do everything possible to welcome families, especially young families, in our parishes. Let them know that they are welcome. Let them know that the children are welcome. We want the children at Mass. We don't want people to not bring their kids to Mass. We want them at Mass because some people say, well, that's the future of the church. That's true. It's also the present of the church. You know, the church in all of her glory is manifested in a certain way through these little children. So the priority, it seems to me, should be to make the parish and make the Mass a welcoming setting for families. Let them know we love them, we want them there, we want their children there, and not to do anything that would drive them away or make them feel like, oh, you're interrupting something like that. So that's, for me, like the most important part of the whole thing, but it's not the only part of the whole thing. So that being the case, I think that the principle that I always tried to follow and that I would advise people to follow is try to do what's right for the other person. And sometimes, as you yourself said, Jen, when the baby is noisy enough, the right thing to do, the courteous thing to do, the way to be accommodating for other people is to get up and go stand in the vestibule if necessary. Go stand just outside the door. Because sometimes when you just stand up and move the child, they'll quiet down. For some reason, I don't know why. It can be a situation where the parents who are so used to the talking and the chattering and all that, that maybe you don't realize the distracting effect it has on other people. And that's where I would say for you to be accommodating and courteous, I think that's an important thing. Both the parents of young children and everyone else should try to be kind and courteous to each other. And so sometimes, even though you may not think that the little child is particularly noisy because you're used to it, you're with her all the time, it may indeed be distracting for other people. And granted, maybe this parish priest is a little bit overly sensitive, perhaps, I don't know. But I would say that he's not wrong to bring it up to you. And maybe he did it in a somewhat, I don't know, clumsy way, perhaps, or something. Maybe he didn't really know how to bring it up without kind of saying it in the wrong way. But I think there's a middle ground there, it seems to me. And then the last thing I'll say, Kathy, is that I know Nancy and I, even though we raise a lot of kids, we're not used to having children in the home anymore. You know, so the noises and the, it sounds like a Costa Rican rainforest at times, you know, with all the sounds that these little children make. And so there are plenty of people at Mass who are not accustomed to what you and your husband are accustomed to. You have to have some, you know, consideration for them, because it can really be distracting, and it can be distracting to the point where, you know, people start getting irked and angry, and we don't want that. We want everyone to be happy. So my advice would be find that middle ground where you can be thoughtful about the other people. And even though it may not seem to you like it's all that loud, it might be that loud for many people in the congregation. I know that there are some Sundays where some families, you know, young children, God love them. I'm so happy that they're there. But I sometimes wonder if they think they're doing something like super Catholic or something super righteous by being in church, and the kids are really making a racket and they will not shush them. They will not do anything. I think that's going too far in the wrong direction. The parents should train the children, be quiet. And you know how it is. You shush your child. Getting up and going out might be the last resort, but up to that point, you can be reminding them, nope, you can't talk in Mass, can't talk. So if a little child is saying, I did it, or Jesus, or something like that, you know, maybe once, okay, but if it's a continuous thing, I think that would be distracting. And so we should be considerate of other people. Now, again, I want to underscore, Kathy, they should be considerate of you. And we want these families and we want the children to know that they're always welcomed. They're not an imposition on us. We love them. We want them to be there and we should welcome them. But I see middle ground, I guess, is the best way I can put it. Does that make sense? Does that ring true for you or no? Oh, you know what? I apologize. I pressed the wrong button. My mistake. Jen, I'm sorry. You are actually now on. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, no, it does. It makes perfect sense. And we love this priest and he loves our family. And, you know, I know that he has super sensitive hearing to distractions. And she was, you know, the families, the two rows in front of us and two rows behind us, uh-huh. You know, we're smiling at her and looking at her. And the most people approached us, oh, thank you so much for bringing your family, you know, and they're always very nice about it. You know, but I guess it's just sometimes like, you know, it's just hard to try to go and pay attention and also help your 4-year-old pay attention. And so, yeah,
I know right where you're at.
Perfect sense.
Yeah. I completely empathize with you and your husband, Jen. I really do. 'Cause it's a handful and you're trying to get something out of Mass and it's all you can do to wrangle these kids. I totally get it. I totally get it.
Yes, I just pray the graces cover us all.
Yeah. And, you know, it's an opportunity to grow in patience for each other and to be considerate of each other. One thing I have noticed that, Jen, is that sometimes when this topic comes up online or in social media, some people they go overboard and they demand that there should be consideration for the families and their children. And I agree, there should be. We should always do that. But they have no tolerance for anyone else. So they don't care, or they'll actually attack people, verbally attack them for being bothered by noisy children in Mass as if they were doing something wrong. And they're not. You know, we're all human. So we all have to try to find a happy medium. And it's a maybe seemingly minor issue, but we're all together at Mass every Sunday for at least an hour. And I'm so glad that the children are there. I love seeing them and I love hearing them, but just not so much that people can't pay attention to Mass. That's the happy medium that I think we can find.
Yep, sounds perfect. Thank you so much.
All right, Jen. Yeah, thank you. And may God give you and your husband many happy years together. Let's see. Let's go to Leticia, listening in Los Angeles. Leticia, good morning.
Good morning. Hi, Mr. Madrid.
Hi.
I wanted to make a comment regarding the conversation you had with a previous caller. It was a gentleman calling regarding should he move out of California because of the way California is handling taxes for abortion things and stuff. I just wanted to offer a different point of view, and there's some people who cannot, as you mentioned and he mentioned, who cannot move out of California. And we would very much like for people to stick around and help us fight the fight, because otherwise California is doomed. And maybe it helps with our apostolistic mission to speak up against it and you know, maybe it's in a different way. Maybe we wait until the voting comes along. And if then California is a horrible place and using taxes for things that you morally do not feel comfortable about, then maybe consider it. But I mean, if we all abandon California before that, I think we're pretty much doomed. And then the ones that can't move out, we're just, I don't know, feel a little abandoned. And I know you mentioned that in your comment after he called, right before you went back to reading the article, you said something about the voting, and that was good to hear. But I just wanted to kind of chime in a little and say I agree with that part. Maybe we need to vote more vigorously or stick around and make sure we do become activists and at least with the people, our circle of friends and people, and encourage them to stay and vote against these means of using our taxes.
Yes, that's true.
You know, you took the right words right out of my mouth. No, I agree with you, Leticia. Yeah, you're right. And I hope I didn't come across, and maybe I did. If I did, I apologize. But I hope I didn't come across like, okay, everybody flee from California if at all possible. Because I realized, I mean, if that's your home and that's where you live and that's where your family is and you're in all the things that are dear to you, I wouldn't tell anybody. I don't believe that anybody has a moral obligation to leave if, you know, under any circumstance. But I see your point, and I don't disagree with you that if all the people who are, you know, who see this the way we do, if they all leave California, it just makes it an even worse place because it's going to continue down that road. So we do need people like you who will stay and try to work from within, if at all possible. The only thing is that California has become so straitjacketed with far-left politics that it just has a stranglehold, it seems, on the state government. And it just, I don't see how, short of a miracle anyway, how anytime soon that's going to change. But, you know, God does do miracles, so maybe we have to sit back and wait and see.
Yeah, that's very true. He does, and you know, I've experienced a few in my lifetime, but I wouldn't want to, like you said, I have my family here, and I wouldn't want to leave and then leave them abandoned and in a state that's just, you know, the mucky muck of the world.
Right.
I want to stay and fight and vote the way that I think is the moral way, but I'd like some support. And I'm not talking just about me. I know I'm saying I, but I'm just kind of trying to be, give a different point of view. There's a different way to handle or look at it, and what is our moral responsibility. Or maybe it's not a responsibility to fight. As you have mentioned in the fight, it's not always, in the past, it's not always a fight thing, but I think if everybody moves, it's just a different way for him to think about it also. I just wanted to throw that out there.
I'm glad you did. We're on the same page on that. There's more than one way to skin a cat, as the old saying goes, right?
Yes. Thank you.
Right. Well, thanks, Leticia. Oh, yeah. Thank you very much.
My call.
You're most welcome. I appreciate
it. Bye-bye.
Bye.
PETA just called and said you can't say that.
Can't say what?
Skin a cat.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's an old saying.
Nope.
That's like back from the Johnny Appleseed days.
Careful. Careful.
I would never do that. That's such a gross-sounding thing. Yeah. Okay, let's go to Cynthia in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi, Cynthia.
Hi, Patrick. It's the oddest thing happened this morning. I went to morning mass and here in Jacksonville, and it's kind of noisy with the young moms and the kids, but it's okay because they're young moms and the kids, and it's 9 o'clock mass. You know, you get through it. But afterwards, we have adoration. And I am dealing with myself with some crises and trying to do some deep prayer. And the adoration is a time where I hope I can connect with Christ. And it was all through the time I was there, all I could hear was these young girls murmuring and their mom talking to them. And, you know, they were talking softly, but they literally talked all through it. And I finally had to get up and leave. I just, you know, I literally had tears running down my cheeks. I just could not connect like I hoped I could. And when I got into the car there, you were talking about.
How funny. Subject. What an interesting coincidence.
It was. And I just wanted to say, I think we try to, you know, be happy that the kids are at mass and overlook, you know, how kids are kids and efforts. But during adoration is a different period of time, I think. Or am I wrong?
No, I don't think you are, because adoration is intended to be silent so that people can concentrate. And so it goes to the question of being considerate. Now, as you heard me say, Cynthia, I firmly believe, because I at one time was the young dad with a whole bunch of kids who were unruly and noisy, we have to be considerate to our younger members of our church. We have to be considerate to the children. We have to, you know, not let their noises and chirping and Costa Rican rainforest sounds get to us. We have to be patient with them and love them and welcome them. Above all else, we have to welcome them and their parents. But being considerate is a two-way street. And so there is room for these parents to be considerate of you. And that's what I advocate for, is that there be a kind of mutuality in this, as opposed to it being all, well, we got to do everything for the young families. Okay, great. Yeah. And then we couldn't care less about anyone else. And if Cynthia in Jacksonville is irritated because during adoration, some of the kids are making noises, well, Cynthia is a bad, mean person because she doesn't welcome young. I mean, some people actually get on their high horse and they think that way. If anybody dares to express, a concern like you're saying, and that's where I think things get a bit overboard. So I don't think you're wrong, Cynthia. Yeah. I'm sorry that you had that experience.
Thank you.
But maybe some of those moms are listening right now, and maybe they'll say, oops, you know, maybe we will keep the kids quiet next
time. Yeah. Thank you so much. You have a blessed day.
Thank you, Cynthia. And I appreciate your phone call very much. When we return, I'm going to share something with you. I actually just unearthed it from the archives in a little article that I wrote on this topic, on this issue. What about kids who are noisy in church? And regardless of which side of the spectrum you're on, there's something for you, I think, in this conversation. So I'll share that with you, and we'll get a link to it posted as well. You can share it, maybe. Who knows? If you're a parish priest, might even put it in your bulletin. I wonder how that would go over. I'll be back with more, including that little article, right after this. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. Anonymous says, hello, Patrick. I'm a faithful listener to your program and to Relevant Radio. Because of Catholic Radio, I reverted to the practice of Catholicism 6 years ago, and it's now the center of my life. I've learned so much about our beautiful faith from you and Relevant Radio, and for that I'm eternally grateful. It is truly remarkable in God's providence how many people are rebuilding a lost faith or discovering a faith that they never knew by listening to Relevant Radio.
Bringing Christ to the world through the media. Relevant Radio.
This hour is sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare, the first to offer comprehensive sharing for prescription medications. Check now to see how much you can save. Go to CatholicHealthShare.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
We're back. Thanks for listening. The number again, 888-914-9149. Let me just get this out there for you. Because it is a topic that when it comes up, it doesn't come up often, but when it comes up, it seems to really bring to the surface a lot of strong emotions about what do you do as a parent? If, let's say you're a young mom and dad, and you've got kids at Mass, and you want to be at Mass, and you want to pray, and you want the kids to be there, and you're getting the mean looks from people because your kids are a little bit noisy. Maybe not to you. They're not noisy to you, but they're noisy to other people. How do you handle that? It can be very... it can be very difficult. So I composed a blog post, and I'm looking at the date here. Gosh, it's 11 years ago that I wrote this. But these are my thoughts on the topic, and we're going to post it in just a minute so you can read it. Or if you think there's merit to it, not everybody will necessarily agree with me, but these are my thoughts. If you think there's merit to it, then feel free to share it. You can put it on your Facebook page or whatever. So here's what I wrote. In Matthew 19:14, the Lord says to his meddlesome disciples, "Suffer the little children and forbid them not to come to me, for the kingdom of heaven is for such." This verse came to mind as I read these interesting and insightful comments by a Catholic blogger named Amy. Now, I linked to this blog post of Amy's. I don't know Amy, but I ran across her blog post and I thought it was interesting. So I have a link to that in this article. This verse came to mind as I read these interesting and insightful comments by a Catholic blogger named Amy, a 20-something mother of two. Seems she was party to a spat in the back of a Catholic church recently in which an older woman was vehemently rebuking a younger woman for permitting the noisy distraction of the latter's children caused in that, you know, the distraction that caused the former during Mass, the older woman. The young mom, God bless her, stuck up for herself and for her buckaroos, and Amy found herself drawn into the squabble coming down on the young mom's side. I believe I would have done the same had I been there. Yes, I can relate to young mom and to Amy, but I have to admit that I can also see where older woman is coming from and can sympathize with her exasperated reaction to the commotion during Mass. People on each side of this hot-button issue need to be charitable and understanding toward each other. As the father of a large family myself, I know from experience how at times kids can be awfully irritating to those around them with their noise and fidgeting and such during Mass. And although all my children are now adults, I have a great sympathy for young families who are just starting out and learning, hopefully they're learning, how to control and shush their children when they need to. A few times, though not very many as I remember, Nancy and I have been on the receiving end of some cranky remarks and pinched-mouthed scowls from older pewmates who were irked by one or more of our children who were making noise during Mass. It happens. Comes with the territory. Get used to it. But in truth, I must admit that I also have sympathy for the cranky scowl mouths who are irked by unduly noisy kids at Mass. Even so, they are greatly in need of practicing patience and forbearance toward those noisy families who, whether through neglect or simply being overwhelmed, do not do enough to keep their kiddos in line. There is room for improvement on both sides of the divide. On a personal note, our family attends an absolutely wonderful traditional Dominican-run parish, one of the best parishes in the country, I'm convinced. And after having crisscrossed the United States and Canada for now over 35 years, speaking at Catholic parishes, probably over 1,000 of them by now, I have seen the best of the best and even a few of the worst and everything in between. Thankfully, the parishes that have me in to speak are heavily skewed toward the far end of the good side of the good-bad meter. At our excellent parish, there are a lot of families who have a lot of kids. I'm talking countercultural to the second power, a lot of kids. Many of these fine and devout Catholics are adept at the art of swiftly rising from the pew and hustling a talkative, crying, screaming, or otherwise disruptive child out of Mass and out into the hallway. This is good and pleasing in my sight. But there are some parents, not many, who don't seem to have learned a lesson of basic courtesy that I believe should be mandatory as part of all pre-cana and engaged encounter preparations, and that is, thou shalt not irritate everyone in the church to the point of distraction by allowing your disruptive children to remain in the pew and make everyone else miserable simply because you will not do the right thing and get up and take the child out of church before people's heads start exploding. Parents must understand that by allowing their children to make loud noise during Mass, they commit a minor injustice against everyone else who wants to pay attention without easily avoidable unnecessary distractions. Plus, it is very bad form, and it's inconsiderate. How I do wish that our pastor would direct the lectors to make one additional announcement before Mass, right after they announce that everyone should immediately turn off the cell phone before Mass starts. Just say, parents, if your children get fussy and noisy, please, out of charity for those around you during Mass, take them outside until they settle down. I think that's reasonable, don't you? And if this were routinely done in Catholic parishes, while never neglecting to welcome and embrace and encourage and support large and rambunctious Catholic families like mine, they are an important part of the future of the church, after all. If we did that, the scowlers wouldn't be so pinch-mouthed, and young parents of fidgety kids wouldn't feel so put upon, and nice ladies like Amy would be able to pray their post-Mass Thanksgiving prayers in peace without being drawn into squabbles like the one that she describes in her blog post. So that's my take on it. And anyway, I offer that to you for your consideration. 888-914-9149. This note comes in from Mesa, Arizona. Tina, who wrote into me this morning, she says, "Hi, Patrick, I'm writing to tell you what a kick I got out of a caller last week named Andrew from Austin, who peppered his call with a few of your well-loved and used colloquialisms. I submit to you this brief email as a testament to those beloved terms of yours and to let you know your faithful listeners are always on the lookout for these little nuggets of fun. When you say in deadpan, 'Drew Mariani, never heard of him,' I still laugh out loud after all these years of listening every single time." Cyrus, do you think Drew laughs when I say that?
Who is this Drew of which you speak?
Yeah. Man, I haven't riffed on Drew in a while. So Tina continues. She says, where am I? So she says, "It is with absolute certitude, may I say to you, that thousands of your listeners..." Oh, by the way, what she's referring to there is somebody was irritated that I used the word certitude more than once in one show. I think I used it twice or three times and it bothered her. Glad it didn't bother you though, Tina. "It is with absolute certitude, may I say to you, that thousands of your listeners get major giggles when Cyrus requests your thoughtful response to some recent detailed mischief of his, and you quip that I was reading the Bible." That happens a lot, by the way.
It happens a lot, and not just on the show, all the time.
Oh, the show behind the show that nobody hears. That is, we should do some bootlegs of the show behind the show, or the show that goes on during the breaks.
Na 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 na.
You're dangerous today, Cyrus. Tina says, "Taco Tuesdays, complete with their own theme song, are particularly entertaining, as are your references to El Presidente. While some folks get bent out of shape at the El Presidente reference, after all, it's your show, and you're a man. Pronounce Mayan with an opinion, and always..."
Men are different from women.
That's a new one. I don't think I've heard that one recently. Let me hear that again.
Men are different from women.
Who knew? There's one more line. So she says, "Thank you, Patrick, for perfectly balancing every day the truth, beauty, and goodness of our Catholic faith with clever bits of lightheartedness. Your show does my mind and body, pronounce body and soul, much good. Muchas enchiladas. Tina from the Valley of the Surface of the Sun." That is wonderful.
Wow, she does listen. That's good.
Thank you, Tina.
Well done.
I feel honored that she's picking up on those.
That's incredible. She's better than I am.
Rock on.
When are we going to get those dolls into production?
I want my
royalties.
Ask Father Rocky. I've been pushing for this for a while.
I want those. I mean, let's not have them made in China. Let's have them make someplace else.
Come on.
They would be.
It's pure chicanery.
Could you imagine walking into a Walmart and just see a wall of the talking Patrick Madrid doll on sale?
We can dream of the day.
Okay, I want to share with you one other thing. I promise this would be fun and easy. Two wonderful ladies in the, where are they? They're in Wisconsin. I met them at a women's conference I spoke at a couple years ago in Chilton. One of them is Rachel. I won't say their last names, but I have them here. Rachel and Brianna. And they produced for me, it is the coolest thing. It's like a little flip calendar. It's got the spiral thing, and you flip each page. And so there's my smiling face on the cover, the Patrick Madrid show. I'm just the guy with the microphone. What they did is they have a page for each one of my little isms, some of which I didn't even know that I did. I never really thought about it. So page by page, this is something up with which I will not put. I'm leaving a popcorn trail. I didn't know that I said that a lot. Taco Monday, Taco Tuesday, Taco Wednesday, Taco Thursday, Taco Friday, Taco Saturday, Taco Sunday. I look forward to being with you again tomorrow. It's not an either or, but a both and. This is for your good to know file. See, they're cataloging my isms, Cyrus. This is amazing. May I say to you?
I think the technical theological term for this is gobbledygook.
Mm. Same Pat time, same Pat channel. Just everybody, no speakerphone, no Bluetooth. It makes it difficult to hear. We got a main line on the program. I think we have a promo with that in there, don't we, Cyrus?
We certainly do.
Uh-huh. In the abstract, I didn't realize I said that a lot. The utes out there, you know, when you're young, not fully mature, you're a ute. And by the way, that's not just from My Cousin Vinny. It's not just from that movie. That's what made that movie, that part of the movie funny, is because it's a colloquialism that's been around forever. Ready, steady, go. That's actually your line, Cyrus.
No. That's your
ready,
line.
Ready, steady, go.
But you've said it so many times that I've been able to copy you.
Yeah. Caller says, hi, Patrick. How are you? Patrick says, not too bad for a sinner. Give me the cash value. So what's the rub? I still got pages to go. Pray the rosary every day. Get that in your spirit. That's another one.
That's something up with which I cannot put.
Right. Please pray for me and I'll pray for you. So a shout out to those ladies, to Brianna and to Rachel. This is in my studio, on my desk, and I see it when I do the show, and I really appreciate your thoughtfulness.
We should have Patrick
that.
Bingo.
No, we shouldn't. No, we shouldn't do that. And thanks for the email, Tina. I appreciate that. Let's go now to, where are we going to go? Let's go to Teresa in Philadelphia. Hi, Teresa.
Hi, Patrick. My question, thank you in advance. My question is, actually, it's a request for advice.
Okay.
So I have been on Facebook for only 10 months. And since Friday, I've made the mistake of going on and seeing posts of people whom previously I really liked and respected, who are very angry about the decision.
Mm-hmm.
And one of these people is someone who's in my, I'll say, professional circle. I don't see them very often.
Okay.
But this Wednesday, ironically, there is an event that we will both be at, and it's a small group, so there will be lots of interaction. And I need some kind of advice to be able to compartmentalize my reaction or my opinions so that it doesn't take over my conversation or interaction. I'm certainly not going to bring up the decision or the posts that are on Facebook, but this person has been pretty vocal. And I certainly don't want to have any transgressions on my karmic record after Wednesday evening. But I literally this morning, I said to my husband, I find that I, since being on Facebook and since Friday, have really lost respect and for certain people that I think it was better when I was oblivious to what their political and religious beliefs were on this issue. I was better off in the dark. Yeah. So this morning, literally half an hour ago, I deactivated my Facebook account. I just don't want to know anymore how angry people are over this decision. So how do I just tamp down my emotions and just be a good actress on Wednesday night?
Right. Well, I hear what you're saying, and I can relate to it. And I've had similar experiences where it's inexplicable, terribly wrong, in my view at least, attitudes on the part of some Catholics that I see on social media. So two things come to my mind. One would be, and it seems like you've already taken the step, and that would be to just simply avoid going there. And you can see how it has shaken you and angered you and disrupted what you used to have in kind of a more placid way of looking at people. And when you see these things, it really angers you. And now you're wrestling with, how do I deal with this person now that I know that she supports abortion? I didn't know that before, and I was happy not knowing. So I can see a lot of value for you, Teresa, if you were to just not go on Facebook. Now, it's a shame, really, because Facebook has some really nice uses, and it's a really nice tool in some ways. It can be a real time drain, though. But if that's the best way for you to maintain your equilibrium and your composure and not find yourself being angry, that might be the thing to do. You know, just fast from it if necessary. Now, another thing you can do, and this is something that I do, and that is I will occasionally preemptively block people. So if I see them carrying on and being obnoxious and posting rude or offensive or attacking kinds of comments on other people's posts, I'll just block them. And that way I don't have to see them. And also they won't be polluting my posts. So if I put a post up there and I can see, well, this person's probably going to be obnoxious, I don't want her or him being obnoxious on my Facebook page or more commonly on Twitter. So one way for me to sort of keep the garden free of weeds is I just block people. And some people I've never even dealt with directly. I can see them behaving badly in other areas. And I think, all right, that's somebody to avoid. Block, done. And they'll never know. They probably don't even care because they may not even know who I am. But that's another way you could handle it. And just start weeding people out that you think are problematic. And that might help you save your sanity if you wanted to stay on Facebook, but also not have to deal with that kind of friction. What do you think?
Well, I actually just deactivated it this morning. I just thought it was too tempting over the weekend to go on and see what people were posting. And I thought, this is not helping me at all. I just need to get off. So I'm happy with that decision, just to get off it for good. But my real concern is Wednesday evening this week, the social event where I'm going to be face to face with this person. And I really just want to keep things civil, but I'm afraid if it comes up in conversation, I'm not going to be able to to bite my tongue and just be calm, because it's a relationship that needs to be maintained for professional reasons.
Okay. Well, you could say, you could just decline to discuss it. So if it comes up and she says something about it, you could just, you know, zip it and say nothing. Now, you'll have some turmoil inside, no doubt. Or you could just say, you know, what the heck? She's being vocal about it on social media. I have a right to my opinion, and if you want to express it. Now, I don't know if that will damage the relationship and cause harm to your career or anything like that. If that's what was writing on this, then maybe I would just take the approach of just saying nothing. You know, if you have to maintain good graces with this person, maybe that's the best way to handle it.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Teresa. Yeah, I'm sorry you're in that situation. We have to take a break, but I'm coming right back. 888-914-9149 is the number. There's a social media meme going around that accuses people in the pro-life movement of not really caring about children after they're born. There are different permutations of this, and I'm going to tackle it and offer you my thoughts about that issue. It's a false narrative, and I'll explain why when we come back. Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
Okay, we are back. Thanks again for listening. 888-914-9149. Before we get to that meme that's making the rounds on the interwebs, I want to just share with you another Supreme Court decision that just was handed down. You heard about that high school football coach, Joe Kennedy, and he got shut down because he was praying with the teams. And this is a whole separation of church and state issue. Well, the Supreme Court, and we'll get a link to this article for you so you can read it for yourself. The Supreme Court handed a big win to former Washington High School football coach who lost his job over reciting a prayer on the 50-yard line after games. At issue was whether a public school employee praying alone, but in view of students, was engaging in unprotected, quote-unquote, government speech, and if it is not government speech, does it still pose a problem under the First Amendment's Establishment Clause? And the Establishment Clause, which has to do with how Congress, the government, does not have a right to infringe upon your freedom to practice religion. It can't establish like a state church, etc. The Supreme Court ruled today that the answer to both questions is no. And this is a quote from Justice Gorsuch's opinion that was handed down this morning. Here, a government entity sought to punish an individual for engaging in a brief, quiet, personal religious observance doubly protected by the free exercise and free speech clauses of the First Amendment. And the only meaningful justification the government offered for its reprisal rested on a mistaken view that it had a duty to ferret out and suppress. That's what Justice Neil Gorsuch wrote in his opinion. Religious observances, even as it allows comparable secular speech, the Constitution neither mandates nor tolerates that kind of discrimination. Joe Kennedy was a junior varsity head coach and varsity assistant coach with the Bremerton School District in Washington from 2008 to 2015. He began the practice of reciting a post-game prayer by himself, but eventually students started joining him. According to court documents, this evolved into motivational speeches that included religious themes. After an opposing coach brought it to the principal's attention, the school district told Kennedy to stop. He did, temporarily, then notified the school that he would resume the practice. The situation garnered media attention, and when Kennedy announced that he would go back to praying on the field, it raised security concerns. When he did pray after the game, a number of people stormed the field in support. The school district then offered to let Kennedy pray in other locations before and after games, or for him to pray on the 50-yard line after everyone else had left the premises, but he refused, insisting that he would continue his regular practice. After continuing the prayers at two more games, the school district placed Kennedy on leave. During oral arguments, Justice Clarence Thomas questioned how the prayer could be viewed as government speech, given the school district's vehement and public opposition to prayer. Kennedy's attorney, Paul Clement, argued before the court that firing him was a clear constitutional violation because not only was Kennedy engaged in private, not government speech, but that the school was taking action precisely because the speech is religious. Justice Kagan had expressed concern during arguments that as a coach who determines players' playing time, Kennedy's prayers could have a coercive effect on students. Indeed, a lower court opinion noted that the principal had been contacted by a parent who said his son felt compelled to participate in the prayer, despite being an atheist, because he felt he wouldn't get to play as much if he didn't participate. So that's the backstory. And the long and the short of it is that this coach won in the Supreme Court, and his rights were violated. So we'll get a link to that for you so you can check it out. Now, for the moment at least, I want to check in on this meme that's going around, and I'll share with you one version of it. There's not like any one single one, but it is indicative of a kind of false narrative that is very common these days on social media. And it's a little sign that says, "Your morality is deeply lacking if all you want is a child born, but not a child fed, not a child educated, not a child housed. That's not pro-life, that's pro-birth. All right. You can see just by looking at this that there's something off. There's something not quite right. And that is the premise behind it, or the premise that underlies it. If the premise were true that all so-called pro-life people care about is the birth of an unborn child and didn't care about children in general, or other people for that matter, not just children, then there would be some validity to that. And I think one could agree that your morality is deeply lacking. But I don't know any pro-life people, and I know tons of pro-life people all around the country. Family, friends, people I've met, people I've talked to, colleagues, and I can't think of a single person who fits this description. This is a false narrative. This is basically, it's a non-existent stereotype that all these pro-life people somehow, rah-rah, sis, boom, bah, all they care about is the child before it's born. But once that child's born, forget about it. This is not true, because it's the pro-life people. It's not liberals. It's the pro-life people who tend to be conservative, who are running the crisis pregnancy centers, who are the ones who are running homes for unwed mothers, who are the ones who are supplying food and educational opportunities and diapers and clothing for children well into their lives and their mothers. And these places exist. Now, I'm just talking about sort of the institutional organizations, the ones that some of the people on the left are really furious about. They see them as the enemy. They're not the enemy. They're there helping, and they do it quietly, and they're not getting any fanfare. I mean, after all, CNN and the LA Times and New York Times, they're never going to do any kind of positive pointing out of the work that these groups do, because it doesn't fit the narrative. It doesn't fit their pro-abortion narrative. But the people who are feeding these children and their moms, the people who are educating them, the people who are housing them, those are the pro-life people. They're pro-life in a complete sense. And so when you run into this, and you'll see other versions of this, this is just one. Cyrus, thank you for picking this out of the...
There's so many. The social media was bombarded with stuff
all
like
over
this,
the place.
All weekend.
Yeah. And I'm sure the people who are putting this together, they think they're very clever, and they think that they're somehow, like, you know, putting you in your place. It's just false. And you need to say so. And let's just address one more thing here. And that is, you know, if nothing else, these kinds of false narratives are a good reminder, if nothing else, for why it is important that you be completely pro-life in all respects. And this gets into kind of a political issue that I typically daren't ever go into, because often politics winds up spinning out of control and people get angry. So I don't want to go down that road, except to say, if your political allegiance, let's say to the Republican Party, is more about, well, what does the party say, and is the party going to vote for measures that are going to expand food opportunities, healthcare opportunities, educational opportunities, subsidies to help support these moms after they give birth to their children, and you follow a political line that might in some cases sort of pull back from those things, then I would say then cut the ties with that political party and do the right thing. Just like I would say to the Democrats, cut the ties to the political system, the political party that is doing the wrong thing by holding you hostage to big abortion and other things. That's just one example. So I guess the best way I could put it is, free yourself. If you are shackled by the political system of the party that you're affiliated with, free yourself from that and be proactive and vote for things that are going to help people who are poor, who are in some other way struggling. They need our help. That's what it means to be pro-life. And to show all the more why this is a false narrative, the more you do that, the more it shows that it's a false narrative. The more it shows that you're not beholden to your political party, but rather as a follower of Jesus, you're willing to do what is right. Even if it breaks with what your political party is doing, you're going to say, all right, well, they're wrong on this issue, and I'm not going to do that. And I'm going to support candidates and measures that are going to help. Now, you may say, how are we going to pay for that? That's a whole other problem, and we can discuss that. I mean, maybe we could take some of that $500 million a year that the federal government gives to Planned Parenthood and divert that for things like housing and education and food, et cetera.
You know, if you're hanging out with your family and your friends and they're pro-choice and you're about to get into an argument, one thing that I've learned from working with Patrick for these years is stay calm. Don't let your emotions override the knowledge that you have about the subject, because they're going to use these same talking points. They're going to use, yeah, you're pro birth, but you're not really pro life because you don't want to feed that baby, you don't want to educate that baby. And as Patrick just said, that's a total false narrative.
Yeah.
And then the other argument that is going around is, well, what about the women's lives that are in danger and they need to abort so that they don't die?
Right.
Well, we also know from this show that that's a false narrative.
That's
no
right.
woman has ever died because she had her baby. We're at the point where you can have a C-section and that baby can live and the mom can live.
Right. Yeah, in fact, that's a good point, Cyrus. Dr. Anthony Levitino, I think it was a congressional hearing that he testified at, and he explained how in 10,000 deliveries, he's on the faculty of a major teaching hospital, and he's got many years of experience. He's an expert in the field, OBGYN, and he says he's never, ever run across a situation where a woman had to have an abortion to save her own life. He said we could remove the baby through a C-section, stabilize the patient, and save both the mother and the baby. Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Cyrus. Well done. Maybe we can get the Dr. Anthony Levitino video. I think live action is what had that out there first. Let's get that posted so people can see it. 1 hour yet to go. Please stay right there. I'll be right back.